You're listening to the 8-4 Comics Podcast, sponsored by StashMyComics.com and our local comic book shop in Roanoke, Virginia, BNDComics.com. And now, here's your hosts, Matt Barrett and Neil Rickman.
Hello, people. We are here at 8-4 Comics, the podcast, and it is episode 6. I am your host, Matt Barrett, and with me is...
Hey, folks, it's me, Neil. Rickman.
It's Neil Rickman. And we're here to do what we do every week, and that's talk about comic books. Every week, Neil and I swap a couple books, read them, come back on the show and talk about them. This week, we have Uncanny Avengers number 1 that Neil has loaned me. He said I had to read this because he was curious as to my opinion on Captain America's continued decline in the eyes of comic book fans, well, comic book fans like us. I loaned Neil Justice League Dark number 1. I know he had some interest in this book, and I thought, why not start him at the beginning? So,
in the beginning.
In the beginning.
Yep.
There was Justice League. Then Justice League
There was a
League
bunch
Dark.
Of other Justice Leagues. Eventually we got to Dark.
Yeah. And then special feature. Since this is episode 6, I thought we'd just lay it all out on the line here. We're going to talk about Secret 6. Why we like them, some of our favorite characters in them, and whatever else we feel like talking about in regards to Secret 6. I know we've talked about them before, but I figured this would be a great show to just focus on that, and we can get it all out of our system.
And yeah, maybe tell some of the folks that they don't know too much about them, give them a little more background, because I think our earlier episodes, we might have just came at some folks that would tune in. They'd be like, who is this team? Why do we care?
Yeah.
Let's make them care.
Yeah, we'll sell you on the Secret 6. It's our job.
Well, Matt will. I might just confuse you.
All right, well, we won't beat around the bush. We'll go right into the first review.
Comic Swap.
Which is, let's do Justice League Dark number 1.
I'll do Justice League Dark, all right. It was written by old Pete Milligan, or they call him Peter. I'll call him Pete.
Pete, yeah.
Because, of course, I'm on Pete basis with him. I don't know him.
Yeah.
So like that. And then we had art by Mikel Janin, a fairly new artist. Actually started it with Flashpoint. Mm-hmm. And the Flying Graysons, I guess, was the mini that this artist worked on.
Yep.
It's an odd style, but I enjoy it. this was a DC book, of course, $2.99. It's kind of like, I feel like this is the dark chocolate. You know, you get the chocolate, the regular chocolate with the Justice League.
Dark
but this
chocolate.
Is the dark chocolate. This is, you can pretend it's healthy chocolate for you. So, this first issue is by, you know, Peter Milligan and Mike Janin. But starting at issue 9, Jeff Lemire picks up writing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of got me interested since I was such a big fan of, I liked Sweet Tooth. I like, which is his Vertigo deal, and then of course I love Animal Man. Coming into this book, there's a lot of weird. It's all tied into the crazy magical characters of the DC universe,
mm-hmm.
who are all. I wouldn't call them heroes. I wouldn't even call them anti-heroes.
Yeah, they're.
I call them crazy people with magic.
Mystical.
Yeah.
Magic-y people.
The team consists of. And I think there's more to what I wrote here, because I know Deadman's on here, and I'll have him on my sheet. But it's like John Constantine, who's not really that much... I don't think he's in the first issue at all, to be honest, which is interesting.
Because mm-hmm.
a lot of people, that's one of the main guys they would know as far as the magical universe of DC. And Deadman, Boston... Is that still Boston Brand?
Yeah.
Is that his name? Yeah. He's... they kind of show him on the tarot cards that Madame Xanadu's looking at in the beginning. But mm-hmm. that's all you really see of him. And yeah. those are kind of like two of the magical poster childs. I will say you get a bit of Zatanna,
mm-hmm.
which is cool. Basically she and Batman are watching as a battle's taking place and some, like, it looks like a farm out somewhere that I believe it's the Enchantress has somehow got a bunch of it's the mystery kind of. There's just something going on with the Enchantress. She's going crazy. And Superman, Wonder Woman, and Cyborg show up and basically start getting wrecked by a monster made out of crooked witch's teeth. And the description of what it smelled like.
Yeah, like what is it, like burnt teeth, fingernails, and
burning babies. Like, I mean, okay, Peter Milligan's kind of sick. A lot sick.
Really. What did you think about Michael Janin, or however you say it, Janin? I think he's French. His Superman drawing. A lot of people had a problem with this, the way he drew Superman.
What was, I mean, I thought it was all right.
Okay.
What was everybody's beef?
I think they just thought he looked a little strange and a little feminine, perhaps. But I think this is a guy, I mean, this guy, his art is really good. But people need to keep in mind that this is a guy who really just started doing this a couple years ago. Like, he was an artist, but he was an architect. And, like, in 2009, he gave it all up and landed a couple art gigs and was phenomenal. I think he's a natural for it, and I think as he moves on, he'll get a better handle.
I like the style. Character. I didn't have a problem with Superman at all.
Well, he's gotten a lot better.
I'm not saying he's got the definitive perfect Superman, but I didn't have a problem with
it. Okay.
But I'm not a Superman stickler either.
Right.
So, you know.
All right, go on.
Well, anyway, so you've got them doing that. They did a lot to kind of, at least with this first issue, they're showing an interaction between the folks who are going to be the Justice League Dark with some of the actual Justice League. Right. But overall, I mean, you get a sense that nobody on this team so far in the first issue, because, of course, you don't meet Boston Brand, you don't meet Dead Man, you don't meet John Constantine. You do meet Shade, who's always been creepy and crazy, or not a bag of bats. I mean, just spoiler here, he makes his own wife or girlfriend or something in this issue.
Yeah.
And she kind of, it's really creepy, the dialogue there. I'll just leave that for you to read. It's a great book for the fall season.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And here's the thing. There's a lot going on in this book that I really like. It makes me very curious to it. I think overall my standpoint right now with it is I almost feel like it should be a seasonal book. I don't know if that exists, if there's such a book that comes and go with a season.
Mm-hmm.
But I almost think this has a home in the fall, and it gets me more into it this season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had my windows open when I was reading it, and I mean the leaves are falling out there. And there are, of course, dark things happening in this title.
Yep. Yeah, this was one of my favorite titles of the New 52. And that was because, you know, coming out of Brightest Day, I really was interested in Dead Man. I've always liked Satana. John Constantine Tyne. What do you say, Teen or Tyne? I've heard it both ways.
I'm going
to say Tyne.
Why do you keep asking...
Because you have more readers.
I hear a lot of people say Constantine, but I've heard it both ways. I've heard it up and down both ways, and I'm never going to fault somebody for how they interpret their comics. I mean,
tomato, tomato.
You know, that is their enjoyment that I'm tampering with if I do that. So,
gosh, I love this art. Yeah, this first arc is really good, and I actually almost, I hate to say this because I really like Jeff Lemire, but I prefer this team, and I really like this arc. And while I was excited to have Jeff Lemire on, I wasn't one of those people that was like, oh, finally, you know, oh, now the book's really going to get good. I was enjoying what Peter Milligan was doing.
I'd heard some hit or miss reviews of this. After reading the first issue, I can't see the miss too much, other than there are some characters. Like, I've never been a big Shade fan. I mean, they tried to make me care here and there,
mm-hmm.
and I...
But, he's all right. His powers are really weird. I mean, yeah, he's just got like a magical vest, and even through the course of the book, it doesn't do a whole lot but like transport people in and out of stuff.
Like, and then you've got people like the Enchantress. Like, I guess, is she going to be a villain in this? Or
she's
like,
pretty much the villain in that.
Okay. Yeah. And then you got June Moon, which you see lots of. She's got a bunch of dupes somehow walk around this issue that are getting hit by cars and stuff. Yeah. It's really weird.
Yeah.
There's just it all is revolving around Madame Xanadu's dark vision of the future.
Right.
And she sends Shade out by the end of this to get basically form the team.
Right.
This is a good get-go, you know, to get on with. It's a great first issue because it leaves you curious as to what's going to happen. There's all these crazy people getting ready to come together, so
yeah.
Anything's possible. I have a problem with too many crazy magic folks, and when you put them all together, and this is a thing, because I had read Shadow Pact back in the day, which was written by Bill Willingham from Fables, and that was a magical team. And it worked some of the time, but not all the time. Mm-hmm. And when it worked, it was a really great read, and when it didn't, I really found myself forced on it. That being said, I'm very curious. As a first issue, it left me wanting more, so it did its job. Mm-hmm. It left me wanting to know what's going to come about, how these people are going to interact, because they're all off balance somehow, it seems like. Well, and I haven't really seen how Deadman and Constantine play, but Constantine's just a daggone. I mean, Peter Milligan has wrote on Hellblazer, he's wrote on old Animal Man issues, he wrote Shade back when he was in Vertigo and he wasn't in any of these books. He wrote some Batman, some X-Men, some Ecstatics, so he's tried his hand at crazy, because X-Men, that can be crazy, and I think his run was, and then Ecstatics was pretty much mutants gone crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So it works. Overall, get down to nitty gritty, my rating, and this is funny, 7.5 on its own, in the fall, an 8.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's almost like every fall, maybe. But here's the thing. It's one of those where I get it. They need the single issues bought. If you don't like the where heroes, our chests are puffed out Justice League book, I would give this a spin because it is the dark side of it. These folks are not by any means in a mental capacity state to be a hero, from what I can see, but they deal with things, they make it very clear that they deal with things that sometimes the Justice League can't.
Yep.
If that's crazy to think about.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was the point of it. And a lot of people had problems with the fact that the name Justice League was slapped on it at all. They felt it was kind of forced and just used to sell the book. I can sort of agree with that, but you know, you got to sell books. And it was intriguing enough for me to pick up because I thought, well, how is the Justice League going to even play?
They're like the bastard stepchild of the Justice League. I like it. Because the Justice League, and this is me just reading the first issue, I get the feeling that it's going to be that kid that you're kind of ashamed of. that like, we need them, or we're responsible because this stuff's happening. We're looked to prevent things from happening throughout the world. But we can't do it. I really don't want to work with these people. Let them work with each other on their own. We'll call them if some magical stuff comes up.
What's cool about the name is later on you find out that this wasn't just a name that was given to them. Like, the Justice League didn't get together and go, okay, we're going to have a little faction here, and we're going to call it Justice League Dark, and they're going to deal with the magic stuff. Didn't happen that way. The group was assembled together. No Avenger pun necessary there, but they essentially, this was the moniker that people around them started calling them, like, oh, hey, what are you guys, Justice League Dark, you know, that kind of thing.
And yeah,
it's a name that they're kind of like, ha ha ha, yeah, right, they're not too fond of, but it's kind of stuck with them. So
how does the Justice League get fond about it? Should I just read it?
How do they get involved with it?
How they feel about them getting that title from the people?
They're really not involved, like, hardly at all, which is kind of weird.
That is weird.
Like they're put in this first book, and then you see very little of them throughout the course of the first 12 books, I believe. Now, I have stopped just because I wanted to see more Zatanna, and I wanted to see more Deadman, and I like John Constantine, but it basically sort of evolved into John Constantine and Friends book for me. And they started switching out characters, Shade the Changing Man's gone, just when you start to learn something about him, and then they throw in a vampire that crosses over with iVampire, and the rotating cast of characters.
It's really weird for me because I like the interaction. I did like the fact that it very much showed that the Justice League needs these guys.
Yeah.
Because as much as the world needs the Justice League needs people? ? I mean, that's crazy to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that angle. They should work that more.
Yeah. Well, for me, score wise, because this was one of my favorite books, the art, I would give a 9 out of 10. I mean, for a guy coming so fresh into this, he looks like he's been doing this for like a decade or more. And story-wise, it was a little cryptic, but like you said, his job got me enough to keep reading, so I'd probably give it an 8.
Gotcha.
This was a very strong. It was definitely out of the like 10 or so number ones that I bought. This was like in my top two.
Awesome.
Yep. All right.
Well, you tend to like dark things. I'm not even gonna go into your dark side again because I mean we've mentioned it before. This is further proof. If I'm all of a sudden not on the show and it's just the Matt Barrett podcast, please look for me.
Oh man.
I don't know what he's done, but it's something.
Well, we'll go into our next book. We'll leave Dark Matt out of this.
Yes, please.
Uncanny Avengers number one. And here we go.
The smack talk is happening.
Yeah. So we got writer Rick Remender, art John Cassaday, both of which are great in this book. But let's go into this first, and we're going to spoil the heck out of this thing.
It's a Marvel book. It. Yeah, $3.99. It's going to get spoiled up.
Let's go into this first page here. It took me till the end to figure out what I was reading, but you have an eyeball with a vision of the Phoenix behind it, and somebody's opening up this face and dissecting it and taking a brain out, and then that's done and we move on to something else. So I was kind of like, what's going on here? There's a lot of monologue that like where somebody keeps talking and then it trails off and keeps going into another panel and then the other panel starts talking. Okay, so we've got Wolverine at the funeral for Professor X.
Yep, he's never killed anybody.
No. And all of a sudden, he's Mr. Good Guy, giving the speech. First of all,
I think it's his chops giving the speech. I don't think it's him.
Should Wolverine be giving this speech, or do you think somebody else?
It shouldn't be him.
Would be more qualified.
It shouldn't be.
I don't see him as a speech giver.
It shouldn't be the man that was handpicked by Cyclops to be an assassin. He was cool with it. And when Cyclops came and said, well, I don't want an assassin team anymore, then he threw a fit and had one anyway.
Yeah. And now he's the guest speaker. And very somber X-Men. Obviously, everybody's sad. We're all sad that he's dead. But Wolverine's kind of whiny about it. And now all of a sudden, he's Mr. I was trying to do right, just like him. And he had a model of peace and love, and we've failed him.
Yeah.
Because Wolverine is all about some peace and love.
I get that they're trying to do there. Like, I get what they're trying to do. Okay, it's Wolverine. He's like, I'm not perfect, but one of the only guys ever tried to help me, even though I'm not, was Charles Xavier. That's fine. Mm-hmm. I don't like him, the Cyclops hate that he has. I mean, he's always had that, but you can't call him out for killing people when that's what you're the best there is at it.
Yeah.
So
what I don't like is, well, there's a lot of things, but the main glaring thing to me is that Cyclops is beaten down about his actions, and it seems like the fact that he was possessed by the Phoenix Force is completely ignored, and it's almost like he sought out to kill Professor X, did it, and mission accomplished. And it's like, where along the way did we forget that he was under the control of a very powerful entity that tried to kill everybody at one point or another?
Yeah. And the girls get away with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Scarlet Witch is on this team. This team that's allowed to talk smack to him, who really set in motion what he was driven to do.
Now, for those that don't know, give your brief history on Scarlet Witch and why we have such a problem with her.
Was it Avengers Disassembled or something? It was way back when she was going crazy. They decided, hey, we need to do something about Wanda. They were going to kill her. So she rages out, goes berserk, and by the end of it, says no more mutants. It drops the mutant population to about 200.
Now that's my question about that. Did the mutants actually, like, physically die, or were just their powers?
They were depowered. Okay. And which meant death for quite a few who might have been in the act of flying or something like that. Right. But and then like the blob with all this nasty skin. I mean, it really messed a lot of people up, and it did kill some of them because some of them had. If you think about people who physically changed, well, those physical changes just disappeared, and you've got like a gaping hole in your chest, like chamber.
Right.
Like, I don't think he died, if I remember correctly, but they had to put all these machines to make him live in him.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm glad you clarified that.
But she caused so much pain and suffering, and now it's okay.
You're an Avenger now. It's going to be okay.
It's all right. Yeah, and you're not just an Avenger. You're on the team that's going to be the poster child for mutants.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Anyhow, I mean...
And maybe that's their angle. Hey, this is so crazy. This shouldn't work. Let's do it anyways.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll keep going through this. I'll talk a little bit about some theories, and we'll discuss those in a minute. But okay. As we're going through, a lot of people stop by old Cyclops' cell here to talk some trash to him, including Captain America.
And his brother.
And yeah, of all people who I thought would have had his back, Alex. I know they've had a rivalry, like, you know, they fought each other because they're brothers, but really didn't see that. I've read Peter David's X-Factor, all of it. I've read the old stuff from the 90s, and I've read the new stuff, and I don't know. Honestly, Havoc wasn't bad about what he said. He was the least worst of, I'll say that.
Right.
But he still wasn't quite what I thought he would have. I thought he would have seen it a little clearer.
Well, for those who aren't very familiar with the character, obviously he's Cyclops' brother, Havoc.
Alex Summer, yeah.
But you don't get much insight on him here. In fact, he seems kind of like a coward in certain aspects. Captain America is trying throughout this book to get him to take some leadership responsibilities. He thinks he's perfect. And the guy's like, oh, well, that worked out really great for everybody else. I don't want to be leader of the X-Men.
Well, yeah, he was a decent leader for X-Factor, but that team's always been pretty dysfunctional, so it was really weird to me that, I mean, honestly, Multiple Man's a better leader than Havoc was. That's my opinion, and that could be argued. Tactically, he's sound, kind of like Cyclops was, but as far as making the right choices, he's sometimes off. It seems like, hey, let's put another Cyclops into the world in a way. One that doesn't have all the experience the old one did.
Now, as Havoc is leaving the place where Cyclops is being held, my favorite monologue or dialogue of the entire month is Captain America saying, come have a cup of coffee with me. And right next to him is Thor looking very serious, and he says, the place we go also makes lattes if you prefer.
Yes.
I do.
Is that I'm almost wondering if it's a shout to you, if you remember in the film when Thor had, I guess, maybe a cup of coffee and he slammed it down and said another.
Right.
I'm almost wondering if that's a reference.
It might be. So we know that Thor prefers lattes over coffee. That's important. But hilarious.
You know, that's some of that Remender wittiness that we love.
Yeah, I wish there was more of that in this book, because the rest of it's pretty somber and dark. And what we find out now is now that there are new mutants, there's a bunch of new mutants who are completely crazy and are starting to take some, what would you call these, terrorist-type acts towards the people?
Yeah, there's something going on. Like, Avalanche shows up, and he's not right in the mind. They see, like, a cut in his head. You're wondering what's going on. Avalanche is back, yes, but it's not really him. It's a lobotomized version of him. I don't know. He's running around breaking stuff.
Is that who's on the first page, you think?
No.
No, okay. Yeah, there's something going on with brains and stuff here. We said we'd spoil this. Before we get to the ending, let's go on to this interaction here between Scarlet Witch and Rogue, which we knew would be bad. Rogue is very upset that she's even near the gravesite of Charles Xavier. You have no right to be here, this type of thing. And then they get into this huge argument, and then we have my problem here, which I mentioned earlier, is Rogue says, he was fighting to save the mutants that you erased. This is referring to Cyclops. And she says, save them from what? Why was it so important mutants be born?
It's really? And now, this is so controversial to me, because this is part of Marvel kind of needing to be on the same page with each other, because in the... Look, I mean, she's crying in this panel.
Mm-hmm.
About, you know, Charles, okay. And even in the Avengers versus X-Men, she was like, hey, I'm sorry for what I did. In this, she's like, no, I'm not. Mm-mm. I don't really care about either one of these two. You know why? Rogue started as a villain. Ha ha. And she's always been weird to me. Yeah. And Scarlet Witch, yeah, she's just, we didn't, when they had her and wanted to kill her, I was like, she should die. Because she's one of those people that, like Shade and DC, your powers are too wacky.
Yeah.
All right? We've got Mr. McFlifflitz, or however you say his name, Mixaplex, and we've got Batmite, and we've got these weird, dumb, like, we've got stupid we-can-do-anything powers.
Right.
We don't need that. That just leaves it like, why, well she's good. Well, this character is just going to deal with it then.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we got a problem? Oh, well, she'll just alter the reality.
Far too unpredictable to be
an I'm guessing now Rick's a smart guy.
Yeah, he's got something on.
He's going to play that she's really tortured no matter what. Yeah, yeah, I've got theories. Let's continue.
All right. And why does Rogue look like she's wearing a snowsuit?
Yeah, she probably is.
She's always got the hoodie on now. Yeah. I don't understand that. Oh, well.
I was upset. She didn't say sugar enough. She didn't say sugar.
Oh, I know. There was some of that. Oh, look. There. The hood came off. She still has the same hair.
Horrible.
So then this big explosion comes right after their interaction. They're like, was that you? No. And then this strange group of, I don't know who these people are. One of them looks like a snapping turtle. Does he not?
Well, you know. It's like a mystery. Teenage
Mutant Ninja Turtles. Who's
the character?
Well,
if it were, I'd be happy.
Then you have a bat-looking guy, sort of demented rabbit, and two other people.
It's Donnie Darko.
I don't know who these people are. Yeah. Are they from Marvel history?
You're not supposed to know, I don't think, because I don't know.
Well,
I mean, someone out there probably knows, but and they'll explain it, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's this strange group of what I take to be villains. They're attacking Scarlet Witch and Rogue. And then we cut to the end. This is probably the best part of this book. There's the big reveal. What's going on here? Well, it's Red Skull
holding Charles Xavier's skull brain.
Which, how? Did he not get burned? Like, completely?
I thought so. Yeah, well, maybe that's not Charles Xavier. That's who it looks like to me, and that's why. That's all I could figure out of why it would have the phoenix in the eyes in the beginning. Folks, just read it and give me your opinion on that. But
he says he's got the brain of Charles Xavier.
Or
but
maybe not read it in the review.
Maybe there's a cloned Charles Xavier.
No, I don't know.
Okay, well, obviously these villains at the end that were attacking them is with them because they got a picture.
I'm not sure Rick read Avengers vs. X-Men. I'm not sure that he did, and I cannot fault him for that. He was too busy writing the awesome book Uncanny X-Force.
True.
Like, what were you doing? Oh, I was just writing a little ditty that everybody loved. What were you doing? Oh, you were making a fool of yourself.
Put some names on a dartboard. Let's see. Red Skull.
Red Skull.
What is he looking for? Charles's brain.
Yeah, all right.
So are you going to continue with this book?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'll say why. My theories, it's crazy.
Remender's a great writer, so
there's
that.
Now that's the thing. His work, you know, aside from, you know, besides our favorite title ever on Uncanny X-Force, you know, from him, he's done some weird stuff. Like, all right, his new Venom, that was controversial. A lot of people didn't like the, hey, he's got guns. I was a fan of Eddie Brock myself back in the day. And then some people very much were. You had Secret Avengers, which was a very odd title at times that he wrote on before Warren Ellis and some other people took over. And then Punisher Frankencastle was extremely mixed how, you know, it was received. So he's known for doing this. I feel like we have slammed this thing back and forth. And it's weird because I feel like I've slammed it because of my opinion on the issue.
I think that's the main thing. And I think we need to make that clear.
I think the art, the dialogue, and everything in this book's carried out very well.
Yes, it's all very good. But if you are on the side of Cyclops, you will hate this book. If you are on the side of Captain America and you think Scott Summers should be burned at the stake, then you will love this book.
I don't even know if you'd like it then. Because honestly, from a mutant, if you're a mutant fan, I mean, it almost seems anti-mutant to a point.
It does.
This book almost seems anti-mutant, and the team's being put together to put a better face on mutants, so it's very odd.
Captain America is very half-heartedly seeming pursuing this venture, almost like because he feels like he has to.
I find it comical, though, okay, because back in the day, X-Factor was hired by the government to be the face of mutants. That book's still going on. They didn't come to them.
Right.
There's a reason. They pulled Havoc because they were like, We need someone who will just do what we want them to, who's trying to live up to... And now that's the other thing, is Havoc's not trying to live up to his brother now.
Mm-hmm.
He's out of that shadow. I'm not sure how he's going to function. It's weird. I think it has a lot of room... I'll tell you why I'm continuing at that point. Continuing because this book, I think, is going to go ape. And it could go ape good or ape bad.
Mm-hmm.
As we're on Ape for Comics podcast. Yes. But it's... I'm really going to let this warm up. I'm going to give it a 6-issue chance. Because that's how many that's issues fair. Are you normally in a storyline nowadays? Does it put them in a trade?
Mm-hmm.
I'll give it 6 issues. If I'm not sold on it by then, it could be saying bye, as there's a lot of Marvel now that I'm trying to jump on.
Yeah. I would give, you know, the art an easy 8 out of 10. I mean,
John Cassidy, I give the art, and this is me, that I like him a lot. It's mm-hmm. a 9 because I was such a big fan of, is it Astonishing X-Men that was him and Joss Whedon, and that was a great run. He does good work.
Mm-hmm.
I like his work, not faulting him for any of this. I don't...
What do you give this story?
The story or the dialogue? The story... This is the most torn. I'll put this. This is the most torn I've been on a book, maybe ever, that I can remember, because I so like the dialogue. I so like the art. I like the layouts. Even I like how the. I just didn't like exactly what was going on.
The tone, perhaps.
Yeah. I didn't. So it's tough.
I give it
as
6.
Far as the topic. I give it a 6.
Yeah.
The topic, the dialogue. Rick is on his game still. It's still an 8 to a 9 with Rick, you know, Rick and his dialogue, because mm-hmm. even though you might not like what they're saying, it they're still saying it well.
Yeah.
it's so, you know, it's just all where you stand on it. This I'm wondering how the numbers are going to do for this book. I think they're going to be well starting off, because everybody, you know, not everybody, but it was very well received, Uncanny X-Force.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people dug it. So I'm curious to this book's future. That's why I'm going to keep on.
Well, it's a very divisive issue, and not even just the physical issue, but I mean the issue itself. You know, coming out of Avengers vs. X-Men, it was all fun and games until it kind of ended, and you almost sort of have to choose a side. You know, initially they were like, "What side are you on?" And
I think Rick, he had to know what happened with, because I mean he saw the beginning of this, you see the Phoenix in Charles Xavier's eye.
Right.
That's who that head is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
I smell Cosmic Cube or something involved with the Red Skull here. Some kind of manipulation to... I don't... It's so weird. I want to know why and how this came about.
Maybe Charles Xavier isn't even really dead. Like, maybe he wasn't fried like they thought he was.
And maybe.
And the body physically...
I was really hoping he'd just stick around like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Oh, well, my astral form's still around.
Logan.
Just sitting on a log. Logan, you kissed your sister. Jean was really your sister. I don't know.
All right. Well, yeah, check it out. It's definitely worth checking out. I'd like to see how other people feel about it. Feel free to comment on this. When you download this podcast from StashMyComics.com, you go to the social section, look for podcasts. Comment on this in the comments below the podcast. I'd like to see what other people thought of it as well. All right. Well, that does it for the reviews. Now we'll move on to our special feature where we're going to, because it's the 6th episode, it felt right to talk about our favorite title that has passed on for now, The Secret 6.
1, 2, 3. StashMyComics.com is the leading free online interactive comic book database. Catalog your comics and track prices, character, and creator appearances. Follow the daily blog reviews, editorials, and a weekly podcast. Connect with other fans through member reviews and discussion forums. Keep abreast of site updates on Twitter at StashMyComics and find us on Facebook. StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy.
Nailed it. Okay, on to the special feature. We're going to talk about The Secret 6. Now, Neil, why don't you give a little short history breakdown for those of you who have never read Secret 6. This is a book that came out, well, just once the New 52 came out, it stopped, and it went 36 issues, but you've got a little bit of history of how it started and what came before Secret Six.
It had a beautiful beginning, and it was a limited series, I guess, that came out in 2005-ish, and had about 6 issues to it in this mini. It was all about a team. Basically, this was around the time that it was just after Lex Luthor was no longer president in the DCU, which was a really crazy time. And the Secret Six were pretty much a bunch of villains that didn't want to join with Luthor. Luthor was putting together about every villain he could get his hands on.
Was this when all the villains were put on an island to duke it out?
No.
That wasn't that. Okay.
It's they were all brought together. They were basically Luthor was trying to muscle everybody into his, you know, under his wing, and the Secret Six were some of the only folks that said no aside from Flash's Rogues, because they don't take crap from nobody.
They're their own villains.
Right. So it was a bunch of odd characters. And you looked at the main team, like Luthor had like over 200 members in his villain team with a six-member core. It was Talia, you know, Ra's al Ghul's daughter, Dr. Psycho, which I don't know much about, Deathstroke, which everybody knows about, Black Adam. I think everybody, Deathstroke, you want to give a background on him? I don't know if everybody knows about him.
What would they? Well, if you're watching the Green Arrow television show,
don't tell me, because I haven't seen the I haven't seen him in there yet.
There's so. Supposed to be some. I don't know what happened there. I just know there's some rumblings of him in there. I don't know a lot of history on Deathstroke. I've read some. He's a bad guy, merc for hire kind of thing.
Deathstroke is he's a crazy tactician though. That's his main thing. Like, he's really talented in just about any kind of fighting style.
Well, and he was experimented on from some military thing, correct? That gave him enhanced...
Now, this is prior 52, so I don't know between the two. I just know that this guy tactically could take out... He was kind of like their Batman in a way.
Right.
Because tactically, Batman could take out the Justice League, and tactically, this guy with no powers can take out most any villain.
Big villain from what I have read to the Teen Titans. For quite a while.
I mean, he just likes playing with people. Why not?
Who else was in this?
It's Black Adam, who is a powerhouse, and then Calculator, which is so weird.
So Lex Luthor had these 6 villains, and who were the initial Secret Six that defect or that wouldn't join? Because I know it's different than Gale's.
Well, slightly. I mean, Cheshire was there, which he wasn't after a while. Deadshot, Scandal Savage, you know, Vandal Savage's daughter, Ragdoll, Parademon, and then Catman. And Parademon was awesome. I really missed him after he wasn't there for whatever reason. We won't say too much on that. But they... I guess, they had the Fiddler originally, too. Before Catman came in and replaced him, like, after a bit. It's just, this team, I guess, means a lot to me because they said no to the majority. You know, I mean, you're looking at Lex Luthor, you're a villain, first off. These, you know, being approached by other villains, more powerful villains, and they're like, you're going to come under me and do work for me, and we're going to finally take down the, you know, our heroes, our oppressors of this world. And we're not going to do it because we march to our own tune. And it's very odd. This mysterious character in the beginning, Mockingbird, puts the team together because they all said no. And they're like, hey, you guys need to form up because you're all saying no. You know, it worked. And I don't even know why Gail Simone originally thought, hey, this would work. Because honestly, you think about these characters, I was like, man, this is doing these characters. These aren't going to be cool characters. They were amazing characters under her writing. Catman, my favorite character out of the team, joke. He was a Green Arrow joke, to be honest. I mean, that he was in Green... the guy who is the Robin Hood of the DCU was making a joke on this guy.
Right.
He was overweight on his couch. The way she wrote him, it was phenomenal. Oh, you really don't know what happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the beginning of all this, I love that aspect of all the other villains are looking at him like, "What happened to you?" Because he is just whooping people.
Yeah,
they're like, "What happened? Like, how did you go from being this joke to like, basically we're not really wanting to mess with you now?" You know?
Yeah,
so it's like,
yeah, she completely took a joke character and turned him completely around. Oh, and while I'm on the subject, quickly, in case you're yelling at your computer screen, I was wrong. Stephanie Brown's dad is actually the Clue Master.
Oh.
Not the calculator. I was wrong.
It's the C's. Yeah, no,
I am sometimes wrong.
This is the world we live in when you deal with the not well-known characters.
There's too much going on.
There's a lot going on, you know. And it's been a while. 2005, as far as this is, it's been a while since, you know, it's hard for me to pull a lot of this out of my brain anymore. I just remember being very enamored with a team that would stick up for themselves and say, we're gonna mess the world up our way.
Right.
Not your way.
So Secret Six originally was like a 6-issue limited series, correct?
Yes.
And then they started it over as an ongoing. Now, I didn't pick up onto it actually until like the late 20s, but I heard a lot of people on the podcasts and on the forums talking about how great it was. I picked it up and instantly was like, oh my gosh, this is that great. This is that good. And I went and picked up the first 2 trades and got caught up, and then online I found a deal on eBay, like the missing issues up to the issue I had, which was in the late 20s. And so I was quickly caught up, and then, of course, like many things, I found out that it was going to be canceled shortly thereafter. But, man, what a great, great run. I mean, from start to finish, these are the type of books, if you buy the trades, trust me, you might as well buy them all at once, because you're going to finish the first one and go, dang it.
Now
I want to read the second one right away.
A small correction. There was actually a second mini.
There's after Villains minis? United.
There was 6 Degrees of Devastation, and I remember this now.
Huh.
And if I'm correct, I believe that involved the Mad Hatter replacing, I think, it might have been Parademon that left the team. Then Mad Hatter became like, and it was a great. The gimmick, if you want to call it that, was that you knew one of the team members was going to get got somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a rotating 6th member.
Right.
So you never knew what character was going to eat it, and then who you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
What other crack villain were you going to get? And by the end of it, when I guess you started reading it and then you went back, was my favorite time, because the 6th was Bane.
Yeah.
They had brought in Bane, and I was like, they didn't bring in Venom-induced Bane. They
right.
brought in, I'm not using Venom anymore, but I'm still going to get it done, because tactically...
Yeah.
The only person tactically better than him we just mentioned was Deathstroke.
Yeah.
And that could be argued. That could be Deathstroke probably going to have the edge there because he's been doing it longer. He's been in the DCU longer. But Bane, look who he's been fighting against.
Mm-hmm.
The Bat family, not the Titans.
Yeah.
He's been going after Batman.
Yeah.
Who could be argued as the ultimate strategist for the hero side.
Yeah. And he references that time and time again, that the one who broke Batman's back, you know.
I wouldn't let it. If I was the guy that dropped Batman on his spine.
He should have a t-shirt made and wear it.
You know.
Picture of a spine broken, a little arrow, Batman. Now, for all intents and purposes, if you look up Secret Six in Wikipedia and you see this picture that they have up there, this was pretty much the core Secret Six one scale. Got the book going, sort of an ongoing. There were some other members added, and they kind of made light of the fact that, hey, this is the Secret Six, but we can have as many members as we want. But essentially you had Scandal Savage, which we mentioned, daughter of Vandal Savage. You had Deadshot, Catman, Ragdoll, who's an extremely interesting character in his own right.
Disturbing.
The comic relief, and Bane, and then Jeanette. Now, Jeanette, did she have a DC history? I haven't read much about her.
I don't know much on that character other than I loved her in Secret Six.
She was somewhat of a banshee.
She
correct.
Was like a crazy...
she had some banshee powers.
Think of Banshee from Marvel U, the X-Men side of things, and mm-hmm. Siren with my powers are I scream to the point of melting people's brains.
Yeah, she took out Wonder Woman.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. She's like them, only better.
Mm-hmm.
And she's very strong, too. She brought a little bit of muscle aside of, you know, besides Bane on the team. She had some muscle to her.
And she gets sort of intimately involved with Deadshot, which is a really interesting relationship throughout the course of the book. She really has this thing for Deadshot, and she's really like not afraid.
She gets all hot and bothered because he offs people.
Yeah.
It's a messed up relationship,
and he becomes like this little teenager with her. Like, he's trying to act cool and all, but he's kind of flattered that she's so into him. But she's so very blunt about it. It's just like, I like you. I want to get with you. Here we go.
Yeah, it's a weird dynamic, but I can't describe the awesomeness of this. Do you find yourself having a hard time describing? It's because the dialogue and
it's how, the relationships.
Yeah, the relationship that made it.
Deadshot and Catman are kind of the buddy-buddy cop duo that you could see. They could have their own title.
Yeah,
just those two.
Yeah, let's break it down. The Deadshot, he's one of those characters that can shoot anything. He's kind of the Hawkeye, but with bullets.
With guns, yeah.
You know, the Green Arrow and that you with bullets. And then
he's a chain-smoking, mustache-wearing...
Kill a machine,
yeah. And he's
Tarantino.
There's no apologies.
He's the Tarantino character of the whole thing.
Yeah.
But Scandal Savage, she's the field leader
mm-hmm.
for most of this. Until Bane comes in, he kind of takes over a bit there.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got a weird relationship with her.
Yeah, I love the relationship, though.
That it's kind of crazy because you get the sense that he's kind of got a thing for her in a way, but it's weird because it's almost all like...
It's very fatherly.
It's odd. And I'm like, oh, Bane's messed up.
He's worried about her diet. He's worried about how much rest she's getting.
And I don't... It's weird that Simone built that. I was kind of freaky. I was like, I don't know what's going on, but...
I loved that about this
and
book.
I guess, what is Scandal's main powers here? Her power set's odd. It's like she's a really good fighter. She's got the blades on the wrist there.
I think she's just,
she's very scrappy and very, very tactically. This team has a lot of tactically driven people if you look at it. Because we'll step to the Catman next. He's no slouch in tactics.
Yeah.
But he's very much a Batman power set to me.
And he's got, beyond Batman powers, he's got tracking. Like
insane tracker.
He can smell. He fits the character Catman. I mean, he was around lions and the Serengeti.
He was going to leave Luthor alone. And he basically was like, he told him to leave, whatever. They took offense and killed, like, he was out in the middle of the Serengeti when they found him. No one knew where he went but Luthor.
Yeah.
And they find him. And
naked with wild
lions,
cats.
Just running around.
Like he's one of them.
And I was like, okay, this is crazy cool. And all of a sudden, they're like, okay, they killed his cats because he said no to him.
Yeah.
Well, that made him, that basically, he didn't want anything to do with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But that made him join the Six because originally that was his motivation because he was like, what the deuce? Kill my cats? Yeah, he wrecked some havoc on him bad.
There's so much to go into with these books. We're semi-running out of time. Let's just run down...
Ragdoll. We can't mention his powers. Okay, first off, he's crazy, but his joints?
Yeah, like, he can...
He chokes you out with different parts of his body. It's creepy.
He's stretchy and pretzel-y, and he's got a creepy face behind that mask, and...
It's all cut up.
He's the comic relief.
It's weird.
Yeah, he's always got great one-liners, and...
It's such a broken team.
But I think that's what everybody loves about it so much.
It's the Bad News Bears of the villains.
Yeah.
You know, and you thought the Rogues were. I will argue that the Rogues and them both, they can both be Bad News Bears. Because the Rogues now, though, they've gotten a little bit too powerful to be the Bad News Bears, in my opinion, which kind of breaks my heart. But
and make no mistake about it, these guys are not all buddy-buddy, all friendly-friendly. They have this weird relationship where they're this team that would do anything for each other, but at the same time, they're not going to step away from putting a bolt in each other's heads if it serves their own need. And
if you love underdog stories, like I do, and I think Matt does, if you loved Rocky getting punched and punched and punched and he came back somehow,
yeah,
this is for you.
Yep. Yeah, definitely check it out. Get the trades. If you don't know much about Gail Simone, this book will make you... She'll become one of your favorite writers. And there's all sorts of great art in this as well. There wasn't too many artists on this, but I want to say there's probably at least three or four throughout the course of the series.
And I mean, I hate to say it, it's just the writing and everything overshadowed it. The art was great, and I don't remember names, unfortunately, and I feel bad for that. I just don't... I was always so concentrating on the dialogue and the greatness that was happening. I never took a look at who was drawing it. Boo.
All right, so pick that up so you know what we're talking about, because we will continue to reference this book on occasion, but thought we'd get that out of our system for a while.
I'll say Dale Engelsman, Eaglesham.
Eaglesham?
Wow. His name, Dale Eaglesham.
That's an awesome name.
That dude's awesome. And then Brad Walker and then Nicola Scott. There were three artists. You were on it, my friend.
Okay. That was a guess.
You just had to divide by two. Three. It's horrible.
All right. Well, that about wrap up the show. Before we go, let's mention our two sponsors. Of course, we've mentioned before, StashMyComics.com. Definitely go there, sign up for the forums. Check out the other podcast, the official StashMyComics.com podcast. Those guys do a great job as well, and they're friends of ours.
Powered by Geek Energy.
Powered by Geek Energy.
Love it.
And go support your local comic book shop. Ours is B&D Comics.
B&D Comics, my friend.
And I'm going to go this Saturday because I haven't been in quite a while, and there's some stuff I want to pick up. Suicide Squad, I didn't pick up 13. I'm pretty sure there's some Hulks I need to pick up.
I don't care. And I'll say this about that shop. I don't care where I've gone in the world. That's always been home. Yeah. Wherever B&D had been moved to, that'd be home.
There's nothing like going into your comic book store. I get the same feeling every time I go into a Toys R Us. You know, it's just a...
But I mean, the folks there put that feeling there. It's just, you have to go.
Yep. All right, folks. You be good, and we'll see you next episode. Bye-bye.